are here with us at Meet Me at the Diner with host Ann Eller, and be here in just a few minutes, so don't turn that dial. Keep it right here on WLMA, 1350 AM.
That's right, we're signed, sealed, and delivered. Today we are talking about the call of the wild with the Greenwood County Library folks that are here. Prudence Taylor's here, we've got Tracy Oots here, we've got Laverne Fuller and Shannon Rickards. I tell you what, they love this book, and I did happen to ask why they chose this book, and I'm going to tell you in a second here. First, I want you to know that you can call in 229-7984 if you've got a question or a comment as we start talking about The Call of the Wild, 229-7984. You also, of course, can listen on your cell phone or on the internet at WLMA.net. We are streaming to just about, I think, every device that's out there now, so you can pick us up. WLMA.net. So this is part of, we didn't have it the big read per se, Prudence. We didn't get the grant for that, but still you went ahead and did the read because it was so successful last year with To Kill a Mockingbird. Isn't that right?
That's right. And we were very fortunate. We didn't get a grant from the big read. However, we got a grant from the Emerald City Rotary Club, which enabled us to buy enough copies for the students. And 7th and 8th grade students in school districts 50, 51, and 52. And then we got a grant from our friends at the library. They've been very supportive of the program, and we're very happy to see us repeat it. And then we got a grant from the Humanities Council of South Carolina, which has helped us pay for some of our special speakers, Dr. Murray Sellers and Dr. Tom Pitts, along with some of our marketing. And then, of course, we always have good support from you and from WLMA, and we just really appreciate that. So thank you.
Well, you're quite welcome, Prudence. You know, I think it's great. It gets people involved. It's all about reading. People have been talking about the book all over town. I think that should make you feel real good about it.
Absolutely. That's what we wanted. We wanted people to start reading and to start talking and really just share ideas and opinions and thoughts about the book, and that way get to know themselves and each other a little bit better.
That's right. Now, why did we choose The Call of the Wild? I've heard several different versions sitting here at the table today, and everybody is snickering, but what was the real reason, Prudence?
Well, last year, I wrote the Big Read Grant, so I wrote it, and we used my favorite book in the whole wide world, To Kill a Mockingbird, which was only fair. This past year, I decided to be nice and allow other people to have a little say. And so I wanted to do Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury, but I was outvoted because by people, two people, one of whom was sitting here, Tracy Ouse, who selected The Call of the Wild because it was short.
And I guess the students, you're the director of the Teen Center right there at the library, and you were making comment earlier that the teens were picking it up and reading it because it was short.
Yes, this is Tracy, and this is a book that not only appeals to both boys and girls, it also appeals to those who are middle school and up, but it's also short. So if they are limited because of different things that they are involved in, they still have time to read Call of the Wild. It is a very short book.
That's right. You know, we were talking about that. In fact, we started having a conversation about cursive writing. What do we think is happening with reading? Just before we start talking about the book, what do we think is happening? Are people reading more? Are they reading less? Are we just looking for the short versions on everything that we can find on the Internet?
Well, we've seen our use at the new library more than triple since we moved into the new facility. And we've seen our circulation go up with people borrowing more books, more magazines, reading more newspapers. Once again, we're in the new facility. And to be perfectly honest, it's a much more pleasant building to be in, to visit, than the old library was. It was small and cramped and dark. So there's that. But I think we have a tendency to dumb things down for our students. We are using the unabridged version of The Call of the Wild. But I've seen this in an abridged version where entire paragraphs and chapters were cut out. And I hate to see us dumb things down for our students. I think they are better than that. I think we are shortchanging them. And in the long run, we'll be shortchanging ourselves because our students won't be prepared to deal with things that are full length or that, you know, maybe it takes a little time to get a concept.
Our attention spans are too short?
Yes.
What do you think, Tracy? You're sitting over there shaking your head.
Well, you know, at the same time, you're talking about people who will come in and read 700-800 pages of Harry Potter or, you know, good for 500 pages of, you know, Twilight Saga. So if a book is interesting, if a subject is interesting, they're going to pick that book up and they're going to read it no matter what the length is. But a lot of times when we give them the type of material, such as The Call of the Wild from school, and we say, you have to read this, then sometimes their interest wanes.
Laverne, just a quick question. History. Where are we going with history in regards to reading? You know, it seems to me that we're trying to change it. Are we changing it?
This is Laverne. I think at some point they are trying to change things, just like we saw in the paper this weekend about the Huckleberry Finn Classic. There are some things that are changing. And like I said, you know, this is a new era, and things do change. And a lot of people are not open to the changes. But we just have to realize, just like with technology, things are changing. I mean, every day there's something new.
And a new app is out there.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. So,
you know, I hate to see changes. I think we all should go back and learn our history. I mean, I think we should learn our history. And even with children today, there are a lot of children that don't even know the background of their history, and that's a shame. But I feel like this is where parents need to step up. Not only parents, but teachers are trying to do it also, that they should step up and help the children learn the history.
Well, I think the history and civics, I think that's one of the things that we're finding, that civics is something that is pretty much dropped out. And when we talk about running our country and futuristically, we need civics to understand the past. Don't you think so, students?
Absolutely. I agree with you completely on that.
So, anyways, just a little aside, as we sit here with 1, 2, 3, 4 librarians from the Greenwood County Library, Shannon Rickert is here. Now, where are you from originally, Shannon? She's an outsider.
I'm originally from Pennsylvania.
Okay. And how long have you been here, Shannon?
Since October of 94.
Oh, okay. So you're working on staying for a while, huh?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
That's great. All right. Now, Laverne, you're from Washington, D.C., is that right?
That's right.
Okay. And how long have you been in South Carolina?
I've been here now for 16 years, so I'm going to be here.
You're planted. Planted?
planted.
You're planted. He planted. Okay, all right, that's great. All right, now, Tracy, you are originally, Tracy Utes, you are originally from Greenwood, South Carolina?
That's correct.
That's right. And Prudence, where are you from originally?
Originally, I'm from Elberton, Georgia, right across the river.
Okay, right across the river. All right. Well, anyways, we are about to get started to talking about the Call of the Wild. I think let's hear a quick word from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
Sunday, Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days.
Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
You're with us at Meet Me at the Diner, your host, Ann Eller. Today's discussion is a book discussion called The Call of the Wild. Here is your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. That's right. This is a very, very popular book. I just found out they had 1,400 copies, and all of them were given out. In fact, Prudence just got one back from somebody that said, hey, I don't need it anymore, gave it back so you'd have a copy of it.
That's right. I lucked out.
That's terrific. Well, we're going to be discussing it. Jack London, of course, wrote this book. It is The Call of the Wild. Jeff is on the telephone line, so if you have a question as you're listening to this, don't hesitate to call us, put a comment in. He's ready to take your comments. And the number, of course, to call, 229-7984. I'm going to turn this over to Prudence. Prudence, why don't you, let's get started with a book discussion about The Call of the Wild.
All right, I'd first like to say a little bit about Jack London, the author. He led a very interesting life. His life was very short, and his mantra was, I'd rather be ashes than dust. But he was born in California, and his mother was mentally ill. She tried to commit suicide before he was born, and she didn't succeed. She didn't even injure herself that much. But after he was born, she gave him to a woman named Virginia Prentice, who had been a slave and had been emancipated, and she moved to California. And there she met Flora Wellman Cheney, and Virginia Prentice raised Jack for a few months, and then she remained important in his life after that. A year after he was born, Flora Wellman Cheney married a man named John London, and Jack London, as an infant, took his stepfather's name and did not know that John London was not his real father until he was older. When he was 21, he made contact with his biological father, William Cheney. Cheney told Jack London that he did not think he was really his father. It was very hateful. So Jack London never pursued a relationship with him after that, which is quite understandable. But Jack London became a socialist, and for that reason, I don't know if you know this or not, I love trivia, The Call of the Wild was one of the books that Hitler burned.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow, I didn't know that.
Because Jack London was a socialist. He had, he had an exciting life, and he and his brother-in-law went to, they participated in the Klondike Gold Rush. And when they got to Alaska and his brother-in-law realized that gold nuggets were not lying on the street for you to pick up or fish up out of the river, he turned around and went back to Oakland, California. But Jack London stayed until he developed a sickness and had to come back to California for treatment because he couldn't get treated in Alaska. Mm. And that was something that I really had to wonder about, because when news of the Klondike Gold Rush reached San Francisco in 1897, thousands of people left their homes to search for gold with no certainty that they would find it. And I wanted to ask our panel, would you have left your home and your family for that kind of hope?
Tracy, what do you think?
I think it would have depended upon the circumstances. The times that we're talking about, banks had gone under, things were bad, there was no money. So it's possible if I had been in that region, yes, it may be something that I might would have considered and tackled. And there were some women that got very rich during those times.
What did they do, Tracy?
They set up businesses, and they washed clothes, and they ironed, and they gave baths and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, they ran restaurants. That was when Seattle became a busy city, was during the gold rush.
Just restaurants?
No, they did other things.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to make sure.
Laverne, did you want to add to that?
I'm just thinking about the type of person, maybe back then, if my family was struggling, I would probably go and try it to see, because I would want my family to prosper, so I probably would have done that.
Shannon,
what do you have to say here about this? Would you have gone to the gold rush?
I'm going to stick with Tracy and Laverne on this. It depends on the family situation. Then again, you might just want to go give it a try just to see what it would be like.
Yeah, I mean, the opportunity for riches and beyond your, you know, and to have survived in a situation where many people were not would be quite an exciting time. We can't even imagine that, really, in today's world, what it would have been like.
No. Well, and the newspapers misrepresented it so much. I was looking at some old newspapers, and the headlines read, gold, 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 and created a great deal of excitement and really did make it seem that it would be such an easy job. You could just pick it up, and really, mining for gold is very difficult. It's a very hard job, and by the time a lot of people actually made it to the gold fields, they found that the best sites had already been
staked out.
Staked out, and they got jobs working for these people and mining gold for them. Excuse me, I'm sorry. What did you think of Buck? The story is told from his point of view. Did you think that London sustained the story from his perspective very well? I mean, was he more like a dog, or do you think he developed human qualities and characteristics?
This is Tracy, and I loved Buck. Buck is a favorite character of mine, and, you know, you get into Buck the first page, and you can't let him go all the way through the end of the book. As far as human qualities, I think he does have some. I think that's one of the reasons why it's easy to read Buck as a character, but you never forget that he is a dog and the situation that he's in.
Yeah, I like Buck also, and it was just like, you know, it's just like he's just like people. He does have human qualities because he had to go through different changes, and he had to learn to adapt to survive. So, you know, I felt sorry for him. I mean, just by getting beat. I mean, I just, you know, that's hard to be the animal of anybody, anything. But he had to go through a lot of things. But he was one that he was determined, and he made it. You know, even though he had to change his lifestyle, but he did make it.
Well, don't you? I find it interesting. We give our dogs human qualities in today's world. All our pets we look at like they're human, right? So I don't think that would be unusual.
Oh, yeah. Mine go to daycare.
Mine go to McDonald's.
That's right. Laverne's dog wears clothes. Buck learns the law of the club and fang from the man in the red sweater. Do you think that's a lesson important for humans to learn today? You brought that up, and I just wanted to get back to that. The law of the club and fang, you know, when the man with the red sweater beats him into submission. Mm-hmm. Do you think that lesson is important for people to learn today?
I think so. I just didn't like that he had to beat Buck like that, but you know, it gave Buck to know that this man was not really his friend. He was just there to get some service out of him. And Buck had to learn this. Sometimes we have to go through things to learn things in order on how we should act at different times. Yeah. I think Buck really learned this lesson. I mean, by this man beating, he knew not that this was one man that he could not attack, because he knew if he did, he would get beat.
Mm-hmm. There's a scene in the book where Buck is he's doing the mail run with Francois and Monsieur Perrault. I'm probably not pronouncing that last name right. But he steals a side of bacon. Do you think that proves that he's going to survive, that he has learned a survival skill in this new environment?
This is Tracy.
And I think it does, because I think back, you know, with at the beginning of the book, you know, he would never have considered stealing a piece of bacon when he was with Judge Miller. But here he is out in the cold and in a wilderness.
The wild
in the wilderness. And he adapts. He does what he has to do to stay alive.
Any other comments?
Shannon, how about you? What are you thinking about here? She's being awful quiet over here. Shannon, what do you think about all this?
I'm going with a lot more experience right now. I watched the movie just recently. Was getting a little upset when he did steal the bacon. I was kind of like, okay, he's going to get away with this. But yet the other dog was there, too, who also stole. And so I was getting a little worried, you know, that this dog was going to get beat. And he's like, oh, Buck's not going to do that. You know, he's not that kind of dog. But yeah, I think that proves right there that he knows what he's doing and he's going to make it. So.
Kind of sounds like life, like real life, like human life, like people do what they have to do to survive, right?
Correct. This is Tracy again, and I don't think I had ever read The Call of the Wild and thought of it as being a book where your environment impacted, you know, how your character or how you lived. But in going back and studying it, it very much determined Buck all the way through the book, the type of character he had. And you cheered him on from page one till the end.
Okay, Prudence, what else you got here today?
Well, one of the most important scenes in the book is, or characters in the book, is Spitz. And Spitz is Buck's primary enemy from the day that they meet. There is a fight to the death between the two dogs. And I have to wonder, did it have to end that way with Spitz's death? What do you think, Shannon?
Shannon tries to sit back and not participate here. We're going to make her participate. Shannon, what you got to say about that? She thought she'd put her 2 cents worth
in. Okay. Well, it does mention when they get back from the fight and all, Perot and all them, you know, are talking about, okay, this is great. You know, we're going to put Buck up front. You know, Spitz isn't here. We're not going to have any more trouble. You know, and I kind of thought, okay, well, if he's a trouble dog, why didn't you just sell him in the beginning? You know, why did, you know, so they were more along the lines, you know. I think they could have maybe, if they traded or, you know.
But was he a good leader?
Well, he was a good leader, and he was experienced, and he was a big dog, and that's what they wanted. They wanted dogs that were good and could work and play well with others, so to speak. I mean, you want team players, but they also wanted a dog who could be in that leader position. And the leaders were responsible for training other dogs to run with the sled team and for helping to keep the team in order. And that was one thing that I noticed in the book. I also had the pleasure of going to Alaska several years ago on a cruise, which does not make me anything like an expert or anything. I'm not saying that. But
would you like to talk about your cruise now?
It was wonderful. I highly recommend it to anyone. But I was reading about and listening to one of the lectures that one of the park rangers gave on the sled dogs, and they talked about how dependent the people up there were on their dogs, not just the Stampeders, the people who were on this gold rush, but also the Inuit and some of the other Native American tribes.
Well, it was the only way to travel, right? Mm-hmm. The only way to get supplies and whatnot to places.
But your dog did so much more, though. Your dog helped you hunt. Your dog helped you transport things. Your dog was just a very important part of your life. I have two dogs. They go to daycare. They're babied. They're pampered. That kind of thing. But the dogs up there, they were not pampered. They were a part of the team. They were a part of the working tools. So it was an important thing to have a dog who was experienced, who wasn't a good dog in the way that we think of a dog today.
Sure.
So I think that was important.
One thing I need to bring up, Prudence. One of the things I need to bring up is a phrase that I've heard for many, many years. Unless you're the lead dog, the view never changes.
How profound.
You're not appreciating that, Prudence. So when you go from being a dog back in the ranks to the lead dog, How do you feel? What do you think goes through your mind as a dog that is now in charge with the responsibility of being in charge?
Well, I think in the book, and you see this some in the movie too, Buck earned the right to be the lead dog. It wasn't given to him. No one pulled him aside and said, Buck, we're going to let you try this. We're going to let you try be the leader, until after he had fought Spence to the death for it. They did try to put another dog in as lead dog. I think it was Solix. But Buck ran him off. And Solix really did not want to fool with Buck. So he may have had the experience, but he didn't have the fire. He didn't have the desire to be the lead dog. And I think it takes that kind of fire, that kind of desire to be that, to be in that position.
And so how do you relate that to the world today or to business or all these type of things? Is that why some people are so good at running a business?
I think so, yes. They have the fire. They have the desire to learn. Laverne?
This is Laverne. And another thing I was thinking about was Spitz and Buck. They are like people. They were both competitive. And Spitz is like, well, he knew that Buck could do the job, but he was like, he was determined not to let him. So it's just like in the world today. You have people that are very competitive against each other. And, you know, a lot, you want to prove your point. Just like I had to prove to Ms. Prudence that I could do the children's coordinator job at the library.
Sure.
And, you know, that's kind of been like, once I got that, I was like, okay, but I wasn't going to stop until I could.
Until you guys got there.
Exactly.
Now, that was just I hope I'm not interrupting here, but, you know, so what are young people getting out of the book? You know, what are young people, Tracy, you deal with the teens and everything, what are they seeing in the book?
I think they're seeing just the survival part of it, you know, the fact that it's a dog who is surviving through all these different crises. I would like to think that they would also look deeper and maybe find out that no matter what type of situation they may be in, whether it's a home situation, maybe a school situation or whatever, that they can adapt, that they can survive, and that they can go on.
Okay. I just wondered, because, you know, here we're talking about on one level, but then again, we've got the experience of living in the world today, right? And I think that makes a different perspective.
Absolutely. Shannon's son watched the movie with her one night, and he made a comment, and I wish you'd share that with us, Shannon.
And how old is your son first? How old is your son?
Shane is 13.
Okay.
We started it, and after the part where Curly had gotten killed, he turned it off and paused it, and he said, Mom, he's like, I think I'm going to have some mixed feelings about this book, and was really, really upset about that happening. But we followed through the next night, and but after that, it was kind of up and down, you know, the way he was looking at it.
So what did he think in the end?
He was still, you know, just really, it bothered him as far as, you know, if you don't treat your animals that way, they might actually do better for you. You know, why did they have to be so mean? Why did they have to be so hateful? You know, with the movie, Buck was making some comments when Curly had passed away. You know, Spitz was right there. You know, why didn't he move? Why didn't he get up and try to help? You know, and so it was just a lot of emotions and that towards the movie, so.
Yeah. And that's been something that was interesting, Shane's reaction towards the violence and the brutality in the film. I've seen people react the same way, adults. We've done a couple of adult book discussions, and they've reacted the same way. One woman told me she could not read the book. She could not get past the part where Curly was killed. And this is an adult. And I think people get caught up in the brutality of it, and certainly this is not something I would use as a bedtime story for young children, but I do think that it's important to read through that, to get past that, and not just to focus on the brutality, but to look at the other lessons in this book. Buck comes into his own. He develops his identity. As he regresses, he becomes more true to himself, I think, than he would have.
Let me just ask you a question, though. How do you think it relates to the bullying that's going on in our society today?
I think it relates very well. I mean, Spitz is a bully. Now, I certainly would never want to see a child fight another child to the death.
But we've seen that on TV. We've seen where abuse and people have stood back and watched somebody get kicked and beat up. I mean,
and I hope they'll learn from the book, you know, that this is, that, you know, Buck is going to stand up. He didn't help Curly because he couldn't get to Curly. He was chained up. But had he been able to, had he not been chained, he probably would have helped Curly with those other dogs that were attacking.
Mm-hmm.
We see him when a man comes after John Thornton in the bar. Buck goes after and protects John Thornton. And he is, okay, the other people in the bar, the other miners do try him, sort of an interesting trial, but they find him innocent because he was protecting his master. He was taking up for John Thornton. Even though I did not vote for this book originally, I'm really glad that we did it because I think there's so many lessons here. What's so funny?
Well, you know, Prudence, you're true to your point. That we can say that, right? I mean, she's true to her point. She didn't vote for this book, but, you know, it sounds like to me there are so many lessons that are parallel to today's world. What do you think, Laverne? I mean, I think that you can see a lot of things that we're dealing with in today's world.
Exactly. There are a lot of lessons to be learned from here, and not just from adult points of views, but from children also, because we do, like in the schools, we do have that bullying, but we do have they are talking about bullying in school, and like the other day I heard Shannon talking about an incident with her son, and, you know, it's something that had been bullying about on the bus. So, you know, and we hate to see this, but society has changed so much. Like I talk about the changes, society is just changing.
That's right.
And I do want to say this, I applaud Shannon for watching this movie with her son, because I feel like now in the schools that we need a lot more parent involvement, and this is something that she and her son could both see and discuss together. I'm glad.
Isn't it amazing that a book? When was this book written, Prudence?
Oh gosh.
Not any time in recent.
No,
recent
it was
past.
In the. It was published in the late 1800s.
Isn't that amazing? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I always find interesting, to look at history and then look at the present and see how they come together.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you what, let's hear a word from our sponsors. When we come back, we're going to talk more about A Call of the Wild by Jack London. If you'd like to get involved in this discussion, hey, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We'll be right back.
What does WLMA stand for? Well, it stands for Wow, Let's Meet Again, right here on 1350 AM, Greenwood and the Lakelands News Talk radio station.
You're with us at Meet Me at the Diner, your host, Ann Ella. Today's a book discussion with The Call of the Wild. Live from Sharp Fetz's Gallery, here is your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. We're back here at Sharp Fetz's Gallery. Yes, we're talking about the book of the big read. That's not the big read, but it is the read this year in Greenwood, The Call of the Wild by Jack London. We've been talking about some of the actual brutality that is involved in the book, but then from the sense of how does it relate to what we're dealing with in today's world, we did have a call from Bruce Mims, who is a retired missionary from northwestern Canada. He said, from our time when we don't kill what we eat, people don't realize that animals were the machines of the times. There was very little emotion attached, but there was recognition of value. And, you know, I think that's true. We don't necessarily, today we love our animals for the love that they give us, but at that time there was recognition of value. And then he says, all of London's books showed adaptability of man and manhood as idealized for the time elemental test. So that's an interesting comment, isn't it, Prudence?
It really is, and it brings us to three characters who not only couldn't adapt, they couldn't seem to learn. The characters of Hal, Charles, and Mercedes. what does London suggest about humans who pursue gold at the expense of their own well-being? Tracy.
Well, to make it simple, they're going to lose their lives. they were ill-prepared. There's a section in the book where John Thornton actually warns them not to go over the ice, and they don't listen to the experienced man, and they go over the ice, and they go through the ice, and they lose their lives.
Yeah, but even before they leave Dawson, there are experienced miners, stampeders out there telling them that they've overpacked their sled. This is Prudence, by the way. They've overpacked their sled, and when the dogs continue to try to pull the sled unsuccessfully, Charles, no, it's not Charles, it's Hal, who's a little maniac as far as I'm concerned, gets out there and starts whipping the dogs, and it turns out the sled's runners are frozen into the ice. It's not the dog's fault. And then, of course, Mercedes is a terrible representation of women. And when I was reading this, I couldn't help but wonder if this is how London saw most women, because of his bad experience with his mother, who was mentally ill, and his first wife, Bessie Mather. They had started out as friends, and they got married because they thought, well, we may fall in love with each other, or we may never meet someone we truly love. Well, Bessie fell in love with Jack London, but he never fell in love with her, and they did have two daughters together. But when they divorced, she became very bitter and very angry and took a lot of her anger out through the girls, through their daughters, and that had a real impression. Of course, it had an impression on the girls, but it made me wonder if when he was writing the character of Mercedes, who was spoiled and pampered and lazy, and can see the impact that her constant riding is having on the dogs, who refuses to learn that these dogs have a set amount of food that they can eat each day, and then she overfeeds them to the point that they actually run out of food. She's just a terrible character, and I couldn't help but wonder if he was seeing characteristics of his mother and his first wife and putting them in Mercedes.
What does everybody think about that? Does anybody have a comment about
that? This is Shannon. I just didn't want to lose my fancy clothes and jewelry, Prudence.
Why would you bring them in the first place? Why didn't you just rent a safe in Dawson and put your jewelry there along with your dresses?
That does go to adaptability, doesn't it? And adapting to the situation that you're in, which is what part of what this whole story is about, right? Adapting.
Well, that and their failure to learn had an impact not only on them, but also on their dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Buck survives because John Thornton saves him, but the other poor dogs in the sled team go through the ice with Hal, Charles, and Mercedes. And while, yes, I am bloody-minded enough not to mind their going through the ice, I actually enjoyed it by the time it happened. I was glad to see them go. I felt really sorry for the dogs who were attached to them because they went through the ice, too. They died, too. Although, in their case, since they were still stuck with Hal and Charles and Mercedes, they might have been better off. But I still hate to see that happen to the animals. But John Thornton is the one who steps up and saves Buck, and that's why Buck survives that.
Tracy, what do you think about all that?
Well, they are just people who refuse to learn. They've got experience around them. They've got people telling them what they need to do and not to do, and they still refuse to listen. And we
sounds kind of like teenagers today,
exactly,
doesn't it?
Exactly.
Sorry, I hate to go there, but it kind of sounds like it.
And adults as well. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
I've seen adults
people just
the
refuse
same
to.
Thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Prudence, where are we going now?
Well, I was just wondering what y'all thought about John Thornton and Judge Miller. Which master do you think was a better master, Judge Miller, who pampered Buck, or John Thornton, who was a strict disciplinarian, but he also saved Buck? Which one do you think was better?
I'll go ahead. This is Shannon. I'll get mine in. Depends on the situation. You know, in the long run, yes, you're pampered, but this is the life that you're leading and that you're in. And then, you know, you've got your John Thornton situation. You know, I mean, either he loved him, you know, so either way he got love out of both situations. I don't think you can, I myself can't really pinpoint the better. you know, it was better for the situation that Buck was in.
This is Tracy. I'm going to step in here before Laverne does. In my opinion, it would be John Thornton. One of my questions to the ladies earlier was, do you see Buck visiting the grave of Judge Miller as you see him coming back year after year to visit where John Thornton died? And I think that says a lot about that relationship.
This is Laverne. I was agreeing with Shannon. Then, too, it, like she said, it depends on the situation. John Thornton, looking at him compared to the other men that had Buck, he was the better person because, you know, he was there for Buck, he helped them, and he didn't treat him like the others did. But, you know, then, too, if Buck was still back in the where he was before he got sold.
Before he had adversity.
Yeah. He was living a life. I mean, he was the dog, you know.
He was the king.
Yeah.
He was the top dog.
But he didn't know there was anything else. So.
Exactly. And pretty much today, we have a lot of, we have dogs like that today.
Yes, you know, I understand dogs. You do.
I do. And his name is Juby. He's my baby boy. And you know, when I left today, he was still in bed.
He's a top dog. Okay, Prudence.
Well, our final thing is, Buck begins to hear a mysterious, mournful song in the Klondike. Why do you think that he couldn't hear it in California? The Call of the Wild.
I don't know.
Oh, well, the answer here, Tracy.
I don't
I
know
think
that.
You can't have it. Silence on the radio.
Well, everybody's going to have their opinion on this, but, you know, at the beginning of the book, he just had not gone through situations that would have allowed him to hear it. He had to regress. He had to become more wolf-like. He had to be put into those situations to where he would be able to hear that call. And as a pampered pup back in California, there was no need for him to hear a call.
Absolutely.
There you go.
That's exactly right. I agree.
That'll wrap it up. Well, we're not quite done yet, Shannon.
But we did just have a call from Bill Manning. He is a mining engineer. He says he has seen towns empty on a gold strike in South America, Brazil. People with no ability lured by gold put themselves in mortal jeopardy. They kill horses, donkeys, and people to get gold. The gold towns are a little different from 100 years ago. And that is true. The gold, the way you pan for gold and this type of thing is very, very much the same. The only thing that is different in Alaska would be the actual conditions as far as the cold and these type of things. But it's still very much the same. When you see pictures of the mining towns in Brazil and South America, it's not a lot different. They don't have dogs, maybe, Prudence.
Well, they might. I don't know. You know.
But they don't have dog sleds as well. They have donkeys and they have horses. I think that's the point
right here.
So.
Well, they use mules and horses, too. As a matter of fact, Jack London is the one who named one trail, the Dead Horse Trail. It was a very narrow trail, and horses and mules were overloaded. They were pack animals, and they fell off. And I've seen pictures of... They're terrible. These horse skeletons, these or not even skeletons yet, just lying there where they fell off the trail or where their masters beat them to death trying to get them to go up the trail loaded or overloaded with the outfit that they had to carry in. I mean, they had to take in tons of things. The Northwestern Mounties probably saved thousands of lives by requiring the Stampeders to bring in enough food and enough supplies to last for 1 year. I think Tracy was saying earlier that over 100,000 people participated in the gold strike and maybe 30,000 survived.
Yeah, that's massive.
Excuse me. And that's the thing I think we see in the character of John Thornton. And really, it's such a contrast when he and Hal, Mercedes, and Charles meet because you have the three, as Shannon called them, the three ding-dongs, who couldn't learn, who couldn't adapt, and who ultimately couldn't survive. And then you have a man like John Thornton, who can go into the wild with a handful of salt and a little bit of coffee, his shotgun and his dog, and he can fish, he can hunt, he knows which plants to eat, he knows how to take care of himself and his dog, and that's all he needs. And it's such a contrast between those four characters, you know, the three and then the one. And it's amazing. And the thing, too, is the greed, because that's eventually what kills John Thornton and his partners. They've done well. Buck has won a major bet for them by pulling 800 pounds. And they have enough money. They've paid all their debts. And then they go looking for this mine, and they find it. But they are in Indian territory. And the Yeehats are the ones who attack and who kill them. Of course, Buck comes back and attacks the Yeehats and continues to attack them every chance he gets. And he comes to this place every year. John Thornton drags himself into a pond and dies there under the water. I mean, he's been shot with arrows by the Yeehat Indians, but he's also, well, he's drowned. And I'm sorry, I'm watching the time,
that's
too.
That's okay. Go ahead.
But anyway, had these men been satisfied with the gold that they had mined, with the skins that they had sold, and with the money they had made from this enormous bet on Buck, they probably could have returned to Seattle or San Francisco and had a wonderful life. But they didn't. They continued to need more money. And they went back into a very dangerous situation. It's like John D. Rockefeller. Someone once asked him, how much money is enough money? And he just smiled and said, just a little bit more.
Well, you know, now I'm going to ask you, Prudence, what is the relevance of the Call of the Wild to today?
I think, well, we've been talking about it. We've been looking at the themes. The bullying with spits.
Exactly.
Adaptability, the ability to learn and to think. We see people, you still have to be able to adapt. Our situation may be more civilized. Believe me, I'm glad I don't have to take a shotgun out and shoot my food. I'm glad that I can have two little dogs as pets instead of having two giant dogs to work as tools with me.
Sure.
I'm grateful for all of that, but my life still requires that I learn and adapt, and I think that's true for all of us. Your life requires that you learn and adapt. You started out as a business owner. You have become a radio personality. You know how to, I mean, you've even got your silly monkey.
Yes, I do it all. Hey, this is WLMA right here in Greenwood, South Carolina. We're going to just finish this up and wrap this up. But I just think that, you know, when we look at our young people today, the lessons that we are teaching them, are they getting prepared to adapt and be able to make it in the world? And when you talk about money and spending money, when we look at our government as they talk about trying to pull back from the edge here, how much money is enough? Well, I think we're going to find out how much money is enough and can we survive with what we have. So those are some of the interesting points of this book. Tracy, would you like to say something else here as we finish up? Laverne?
Yes, this is Laverne. And like Bruce was talking about the three men, you know, like sometimes the people, sometimes it's never enough. They always want more. Always want more. They can't be satisfied with what they have. But
we've learned lately how to live on less, haven't we?
Yes.
We all have, yes.
Yeah. I had to get a smaller car because of gas.
Because of gas. Well, we all learn to adapt. Tracy, what do you see as far as young people? Because you're dealing with them every day. What do you see?
It's just all about learning. It's getting that education. It's making the best of what you have and the best of your environment, what it, you know, puts before you. You know, we're not all born into a millionaire's homes. You know, some of us are born into bad economies and small towns, and you can, you know, get your education, and you can be whatever it is that you want to be.
Do you think we're giving our, and this is a little off the subject, but do you think we're giving our young people the opportunity to learn outside of book learning or outside of learning on the internet. Do you think we're giving them those experiences? Sometimes I think we're actually coddling our kids so much that they don't see any of the harsh realities out there sometimes. Not that we want our children to suffer, that's not what I'm saying, but to be able to learn and adapt. Or do they wait till they're 25 and then get out there and go, oh my God, I've got to balance a checkbook? You know, things like that.
This is Laverne. I think a lot of times parents tend to give more. Kids these days, they don't know how hard it is to go out and earn something, actually. It's just like parents getting it. And I have to, I'm guilty at that sometimes because I have one child.
Sure.
And, you know, we just tend to give her. But now we see that we need, we have to tell her this is it, you know, because things are changing, the economy is changing, and money's getting less.
Sure.
But a lot of times we just
we have been able to do that.
And due to workload, parents tend to satisfy children by just buying this and that, because we have so many parents that are just working and not taking the time with the children that they need to.
Yeah, at the end of the day, they're exhausted. They are. All right, Prudence, you want to wrap this up here for us? What else you got to say? I kind of took over here. I'm sorry.
No, I'm glad you did. Thank you for letting us come today, and we really appreciate it. The library will be showing White Fang on Saturday, February 5th at 2 o'clock, and Dr. Tom Pitts will be presenting the program before. He's very funny. He's the professor of art at Lander University, and so we're really looking forward to that. Also, the Arts Council is working with us, and we are going to have a related photo exhibit and contest, and the winners of that will be, the prizes will be awarded Friday night, February 4th, so we're looking forward to that too. But you will want to see the photos in the exhibit, because we have some very talented students at Piedmont Tech and Lander, and I think you'll really enjoy that. So I encourage people to come out and see that.
All right, now the new library, hours of the new library, since they are a little different than what they were in the old days, they're not different from the new old days.
The library is open from 9 to 8, Monday through Wednesday, 9 to 5:30, Thursday and Friday, 12 to 4 on Saturday, 2 to 5:30 on Sunday.
There you go. Say, listen, this has been a lot of fun. I sure appreciate everybody coming out today. And, Shannon, I sure hope you'll join us next year when we do this again next year, because I know there'll be another book. What's the book you're going to do next year?
Well, I've applied for another Big Read grant, and the book the students will be will be using is The Boy Who Dared by Susan Bartoletti Campbell. If we get the Big Read grant, the book the adults will be using is The Shawl by Cynthia Ozick, which is very short.
A consideration for today's world.
The Boy Who Dared is also very short. Well, that's one thing that we have learned. The students had time to read The Call of the Wild because it was short. But also, I found that some adults who are reluctant readers or who are slow readers also enjoyed it, because this book is so unintimidating.
That's great.
And that's wonderful. That's what we want. It's great literature. You know, the language is wonderful. Jack London does not write down to anybody, and neither does Cynthia Ozick, and neither does Cynthia Bartoletti Campbell. Or Campbell Bartoletti. But these are things that we can enjoy, and they present ideas and things that are worth our time and worth discussion.
All right. I certainly hope everybody has enjoyed our book discussion here today, The Call of the Wild by Jack London. We should be able to post this on the web if you'd like to go back and review it and listen to it, or maybe you didn't get to listen to it today. This is your favorite radio station, WLMA, right here in Greenwood, South Carolina. Yes, I'm Ann Eller. Yes, we're going to hear a few words from some sponsors, and then, yes, we're going to hear the G-Man again. We're working on getting our programming straight, so you keep it right here on 1350 AM. Bye-bye, Andy.
Bye, Ed.